Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Radio 92.7 FNZ, Willie P. in for Nick Wilson. Hope you're enjoying yourself today. Plenty to get to on this program, including some Panther talk with Ellis Williams at 11:20. We'll get into the latest on the Baker, Garoppolo, etc. sweepstakes. But plenty also on the Hornets. Charming or Chach comes your way at 11:40. We learned a lot with Beth Troutman and Ted Forty about crabs and beer and the wood frog, etc. and so on. But we learned also a heck of a lot from this latest tweet from ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski. Mike D'Antoni is set to meet with Charlotte Hornets owner Michael Jordan on the franchise's coaching job today. D'Antoni was the other Charlotte finalist before Kenny Atkinson changed his mind on accepting the position and stayed in Golden State on Saturday. Woj was, of course, first on the Atkinson move, so stands to reason that he has some pretty good intel on this one as well. And at least right now, putting D'Antoni in the catbird seat. And I'm not necessarily happy. But I'm kind of resigned to it because I do feel like this is probably the way that it's probably going to go momentum-wise. I know that Terry Stotts comes off, for whatever reason, for people a little flat. D'Antoni is the flashy name. And right now, the only way to really kind of save face right now is to get the flashy name. If you are Mike D'Antoni, if you are Michael Jordan and Mitch Kupchak, because you feel like you've been besmirched, you feel like you've been hoodwinked, left at the altar by a dude who literally doesn't deserve all this praise, and yet they're going to go back and try to get D'Antoni because they feel like they need to save face. I don't like it, but I will leave you with this part of it, because I know you and I, Fitty, have sparred on this. I know Flounder and I have sparred on this with Crimson D'Antoni, and I think Mac and I have done so as well. The player does not make the coach in the NBA, in my opinion. I think the coach is made by the player. So when you talk about what D'Antoni did in Phoenix, that's largely due to Nash and Stoudemire, etc. People forget Sean Marion was a very underrated part of that squad too as well. I'm not saying that he's an end-all, be-all Hall of Famer, but very, very big part. I don't know if there's even a guy that's that kind of guy on this roster right now. When it comes to what he did in Houston, he had James Harden, he had Capella, had lots of other great tools. Don't know if he had that necessarily in Charlotte. When he was in New York, he had Carmelo. He squeezed every little bit of the player out of Jeremy Lin. Funny enough, after he left, Carmelo actually got better under Mike Woodson. So what does that tell you about the kind of effect that D'Antoni had on Carmelo? And the Lakers thing was obviously a disaster. So again, it's obvious to me that it looks like this is probably the direction the Hornets are going to go in. I'm not happy about it. I'll make all the, you know, no D in D'Antoni jokes and all that. I'm with you. But at the same time, I look at this and I say, you know what? This is them basically settling right now because, like I said on Monday, I would have tried to go back and restart the process.
Yes.
Go back to square one. This, to me, looks like they're trying to take the easy way out and take the escape hatch here.
Yeah, I don't mind them hiring Mike D'Antoni. He was my choice when the job became available. He became a candidate. But it would be after vetting out Quinn Snyder's actual interest in the position, interviewing a Sam Cassell, going down the path of different assistants that are still available to be interviewed. And if you still come through it and D'Antoni is the best option and you hire him, okay. If you do this now before Thursday, you're shortcutting a process, even though you may still be getting an upgrade as a head coach, because I do think Mike D'Antoni is a better head coach than Kenny Atkinson, a better fit in Charlotte than Kenny Atkinson. But you got to do the process right, not shortchange it. And right now, it's a sign the organization is dysfunctional, and they're in panic mode.
It's very much panic. It's a panic move. It's very much a panic move. And, you know, we had gotten some rumblings about, you know, potential of somebody possibly coming into town about whether or not that could be something that, that develops over the next couple of days. And this could just be a check-in. This could be something that's no more than just a, hey, are you still interested situation. Which, again, D'Antoni could tell him to, you know.
But he's meeting with MJ. He didn't meet with MJ before before Atkinson or after Atkinson.
Well, here's the biggest problem. And I think this is probably revealing it. The biggest problem is the times that MJ is involved signals something big is coming with that person or with the Charlotte Hornets. That's my biggest problem, is that MJ should be probably more involved than he really is. And I know that probably sounds, you know, given the framework of his decision making, probably sounds antithetical to the way of the good, but the fact that we're taking MJ meeting with D'Antoni as a serious move tells you just how uninvolved it seems like MJ is with the day-to-day of the Charlotte Hornets.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this was a guy who, after being in attendance for that weekend against the LA teams, we didn't see him for the next 4 months. And the team gets blown out on the road by a very good Atlanta team, and 3 weeks later, they fire their head coach.
When I say the player doesn't make the coach is made by the player. What I'm saying is that the coach doesn't make the player. The coach is the person who is basically the conduit that benefits from the player's greatness, is what I was trying to say. I think that in terms of the impact that coaching has on a player in the major sports, the NBA probably has the least impact when it comes to a coach.
I understand that point. That point very well may be true. Here's my issue with that statement in regards to Mike D'Antoni. He took Steve Nash from a good player to a great player and a two-time MVP. He saved Amari Stoudemire's career. He got the best version of James Harden we've ever seen. The whole thing about Carmelo, he didn't fit. Carmelo's an isolation player. He never fit what Mike D'Antoni wanted to do. The second that they traded for Melo, D'Antoni's tenure in New York was a ticking time bomb. It was not going to last long term. You give him LaMelo Ball. The sky is the limit with what he can do. On top of what LaMelo's already going to do, because LaMelo's going to continue to grow and progress at his own rate.
But I think LaMelo could be good independent of whoever the coach is.
Yeah, but D'Antoni can make him great. Because he's made.
I think he can be great no matter who's the coach.
He's made players. He made Steve Nash great. He made James
Steve
Harden.
Steve Nash made Steve Nash great.
He made Steve Nash or James Harden an MVP. They were a game seven away from making the finals.
James Harden has talent. That's what the talent is. These guys all have talent. Where is the representative talent that was on those teams in the Charlotte Hornets? I ask you.
He could get more out of Miles Bridges.
Who knows if Miles is even going to be here?
He could get more. He could help speed
Shams,
up the progression.
You ask Shams, he's gone to Detroit by now.
he could speed up the progression of a James Booknight.
Again, I struggle to see what kind of negligible impact he would have at age 71 on this roster. And I also think, too, my biggest problem with the D'Antoni thing is that while it's not a like-for-like match, philosophically, it's very similar to what you had with James Borrego, in that you're trying to win with offense, and the defense, we're just kind of hoping and praying and closing our eyes and hoping that it doesn't rear its ugly head on a night-in, night-out basis.
Well, he will have the same tone of, I'm going to need a big man, because when he had a big man in Houston, his worst defense in Houston was rated 18th in the league. But when they got Clint Capella, they were the 6th rated defense in the league. So you shore up that back line with whether it's you trade for a Miles Turner, you draft a Mark Williams, someone of those guys, there's history that they can be average to above average defensively. And if that's the case, this team's going to finish top 6 in the East.
The only thing that I will say that coaches can provide is motivation. But as far as a system goes and all that type of stuff, like, great players are great players no matter the system. And I'll give you this example, and it's from the NBA Finals. Steve Kerr was sitting on the parade route yesterday with Golden State, and someone was asking him, hey, how much longer do you think you're going to coach, Steve? And he said, how much longer is Steph Curry playing? Steph Curry makes Steve Kerr look awful good.
He does.
Steph Curry makes Kenny Atkinson look awful good. So in the end, what are we even talking about here? We're talking about needing better players. And here's the other part of it. I'm not ready to say whether or not Mike D'Antoni would be a good head coach of the Charlotte Hornets. Again, we're reacting to the fact that Woj said that D'Antoni's meeting with MJ today. I'm not ready to say whether or not D'Antoni is going to be a good coach for the Hornets until I see what the roster looks like, because that's ultimately going to be the telltale sign. If the roster looks very much the same, if it's Ball, Rozier, maybe Bridges, Gordon Hayward, PJ Washington, and Mason Plumlee, I don't know how that's different than what you had before.
I don't think they lose the games they lost last year at times at Houston, to Orlando, to Detroit. And this is going to come across as a shot at James Borrego, and it's not. But you talk about him being 71 years old, he's much more experienced. He's going to know how to handle his teams in late-game situations. I think that's what the benefit of the same style, that free-flowing, depending on that offense. But in the final 4 minutes, you got to run your four-minute offense. It's going to be better under D'Antoni. And I think those four or five wins, you're solidly in the playoffs, and you're not dealing with the play-in. That's the difference I think you get with D'Antoni, even with the current roster. You get a big man here, they can win 50 games.
Texter from the 336, how is it a panic move or shortchanging the process to not go back through interviewing other assistants now? They just went through a very deliberative process that took longer than most people thought it would. What's changed about those assistants that they need to go start from square one and do it again weeks later? Because here's the problem. The process led you to a guy who reneged. So that tells me the process was flawed. And it tells me that you did something wrong. And I personally don't understand why you're just going right back to the same well that you were under, because, again, I think that the D'Antoni going right back to him seems like a panic move. 704-570-9610, Willie P. in for Nick Wilson. We'll continue to break this down throughout the rest of the show and see what exactly else comes out from the folks at the Spectrum Center and things of that nature. But we'll get into some Panther talk next with Ellis Williams from the Charlotte Observer. I'll ask him, how close are we to a new quarterback in Carolina? Seems like a never-ending question. Sports Radio 92.7 FNZ. And I'm not even going to call him Mike D'Antoni. I'm just going to call him Mike Antoni, because there's no D in that team. Sports Radio 92.7 FNZ, Willie P. in for Nick Wilson. You know, after all that talk that we had with Beth Troutman in the bit with Beth last hour about Brooks Sandwich House, we need to get Flounder down here to get to do a food run. Like, that needs to happen, like, post-haste. I'm ready. Sign me up for a cheeseburger all the way with a liver mush sandwich. I'm all there. We'll get back into the D'Antoni thing later. Look, you guys, I don't know how you can't sit here and tell me that's not a panic move. I'm sorry. Because, again, I'm all about blaming Kenny. But the Hornets centering in on a guy who flakes also leads me to believe that you have a little bit of an issue. What's so funny over there? What's so funny over there? You can't laugh in this studio and not turn your mic on. Tell him what the heck is so funny.
He flakes?
He flaked. Did he not flake? Tell him he flaked.
I've just never heard that used as a way to describe, you know, coming up short. And I flopped, failed.
What, Atkinson?
Yeah.
He flaked. He flaked on the deal.
Oh, they're talking about D'Antoni.
Oh. No, I said Atkinson flaked on the deal. What?
That's just great. This is why I love working with you. I learn something new. I get a new phrase out of you.
You've never heard about somebody flaking?
Not in that connotation, no.
You're an interesting cat, pal. We'll pivot to the Panthers and talk a little bit with Ellis Williams from the Charlotte Observer. Not to be outdone, the Panthers have their own concerns right now as we sit about a month away from training camp beginning down in Wofford and all the heat and everything else. Ellis joins us on the Telecom Hotline. What's up, E-Dub? How are you, pal?
Willie P., my boy. How we doing?
I'm good, man. So are we going to get a new quarterback in here, or are we just going to play this same song and dance for the next 4 weeks? You know, where are we in terms of this actually happening for the Carolina Panthers?
Man, well, I'll tell you where we're not. We are not watching mini camp, standing in blazing heat and humidity, wondering that same exact question. So it is nice talking to you in air conditioning right now.
Yes.
Yet we are still contemplating the same thing. And I'll tell you this, as was much of the theme as minicamp concluded last Thursday, Panthers players, coaches, and executives are going on break, right? Like, it's quiet down there on Mint Street. The players, coaches, executives, they're away. So for this trade to happen, I would suspect if it's going to occur, whether it's Baker Mayfield, whether Jimmy Garoppolo is back in the picture, these trade talks will not pick up again until we get closer to training camp. So we're talking middle of July, probably. So to answer your question, yes, we are going to keep doing this dance for 4 weeks, but I don't think talks can really pick back up until NFL decision makers are just back in their offices, because, you know, they're human too, right? They got to find some time off in the never ending schedule that is the NFL calendar. And with us being about 4.5, 5 weeks away from training camp, this is really the window where people in the NFL world are able to escape for a little bit. So I think this is on hold for a while. We'll table it and come back to it come early, mid-July. And as usual, the names to watch are Baker Mayfield and not Jimmy Garoppolo, as reports say he'll be ready to throw by training camp.
Ellis, you know that Cleveland front office about as well as anybody. Why do they think they have any kind of leverage?
It's a good question. You can see it both ways, right? Like, first of all, they have a quarterback who has proven himself as a winner, a guy who ended Cleveland Browns' playoff drought. They hadn't won a playoff series since 1993. He had a top 10 QBR over his last 9 or 10 games of that 2020 season. They're also holding a guy who plays the most valuable position in sports, right? And I remember when Teddy Bridgewater tore his knee up, and then all of a sudden in August, the Vikings had to do a panic trade for Sam Bradford from the Eagles, who were housing like three quarterbacks at the time, Carson Wentz, Sam Bradford, and then they had another one, as Philly tends to do, stockpile quarterback there. So leverage is much more about timing than anything, and when you combine that with the player and the position, they're betting on the fact that his market will just naturally pick back up at some point. The flip side of that is, the relationship is destroyed. Baker Mayfield will never play another down for the Cleveland Browns. So at the end of the day, we're talking about a discrepancy between like $4 or $5 million and maybe a round or two in draft compensation. Like, I think they understand that they're not getting anything better than a fourth or a fifth round pick. So really it comes down to the money, which it always does. So leverage is really a code word for, I think, urgency. And right now, I don't think either side, that be Cleveland or Charlotte or the Carolina Panthers, feel real urgency to get this done. Time, urgency, those types of things do put fear into teams, and then fear does the job of reason, right? So once this becomes more urgent matter, fear sets in, and one side will do the reasonable thing and cave. And this, a trade for a quarterback, I'm leaning towards more likely than not, but again, this is all about the timing.
How much money, if any, do you feel like Carolina is willing to absorb of Baker Mayfield's 2022 contract?
Man, they want a bargain, that's for sure. Everyone I've talked to, other reports out there, they're only doing this if it's at a bargain price, which to me says that the Panthers don't want to pay more than $4 or $5 million if Baker Mayfield's nearly $19 million guarantee. So, you know, if the Browns are willing to pay like 12 million of that. I could see the Panthers being much more interested in terms of it's not going to be an even split. They don't see this as a situation where they're going to want to take on it anywhere near half that. So I think the number's a lot lower than Cleveland is willing to listen to right now. At the end of the day, that could change one side meeting the other closer to where they want it to land. But right now, it just doesn't seem like either side is that close. And I don't think during minicamp last week that this trade ever really was off the ground or any closer than it was during the draft.
Ellis Williams joining us from the Charlotte Observer. Off of the Carolina quarterback discussion, I feel like the other kind of main discussion right now is what's happening on the opposite side of Brian Burns at pass rusher. I know that they did entertain Carlos Dunlap. He left without a deal. What do you make of Carolina's lack of urgency to bring in somebody substantive to be the pass rusher on the opposite side and instead do it by a committee of those who are already on the roster?
Yeah, I think that they believe and like their in-house talent. Frankie Louvu, Gross Matos, Haynes, those guys are going to have a chance to fill the Hassan Reddick void, and it's going to be by committee. I'm very certain that a extra edge rusher body will be brought in at some point, just for a sheer numbers game. Like, it's a position you need depth in. They're not going to find a marquee name to come in and play. You know, Hassan Reddick played the third most defensive snaps on the team last year. They're not going to bring in someone to take over his snap count. Like I said, this will be done by committee. But they are just going to bring in another body to bolster that room. And, Scott Fitterer comes from the Seattle Seahawks type of mindset where there's not real urgency to bring in edge rushers till you get into camp, because it's a position that you really can learn on the fly. At the end of the day, these guys are paid to rush the passer on third down and make a play then. So it's a spot where they're going to see the type of depth they have. They've probably already gone through their mini camp takeaways, and they'll bring a guy in at some point, would be my guess.
Ellis, in terms of things that we could glean from OTAs and minicamp, I don't know if we could have gleaned really anything from minicamp. I feel like minicamp was very much an exercise for them and not really for us. But I guess what would you be your most stark takeaway from what we saw over the 3 or 4 weeks that we were able to see the Panthers up close and personal?
I think just the offense finding its groove a bit and this Ben McAdoo system finally getting an identity. We saw a lot of quick throws, ball in and out of Sam Darnold's hands, the ability for some quick strikes, but schemed up. We also saw Sam Darnold take advantage of some one-on-one matchups in a Ben McAdoo system. He's going to have that leeway to come to the line, and if he likes something for one of his outside wide receivers, he's going to be able to get into that play. We saw Brandon Zelstra go up and make a play in the back of the end zone on the left side there when he was isolated on that third day. So I think just seeing bits and pieces of Ben McAdoo's offense come together, and we could start envisioning what DJ Moore and Christian McCaffrey will look like in this system, regardless of quarterback. We know what the goals of the offense are. And then when you see the offensive line, the bulk of the starters sitting out, but just, watching Ikeviquanu walk into that press room and you see just his natural size, you can envision how this reshaped offensive line in a Ben McAdoo system is going to improve the quarterback play regardless who's back there, especially when you put the skill position guys, the first team guys out there, again, the DJ Moores and Christian McCaffrey of the world. You just kind of see where this offense and what it's trying to accomplish. So I thought that was the biggest takeaway, along with just the energy and theme of OTAs, which just felt a little more loose. It felt like Matt Rhule is become in a way just comfortable or letting it fly in this third year, realizing he probably doesn't have much to lose and that this will end however it ends. It could end in him having another year, another crack at this, if this team can make a run for the playoffs, or he'll be out the door. But either way, that doesn't change being in the moment and making the most of what is really their first full OTA off-season program because of COVID and all the challenges that we've all been dealing with. So I thought it just was a more cool, calm, and collective Matt Rhule leading a team that felt comfortable with where they were at in this the progress of their off-season combined with a new offense finally kind of finding an identity.
To that end, Ellis, I got about 90 seconds. What is the floor, or what is the least that Matt Rhule has to do to keep his job?
This team has to be real contenders for the playoffs. They're, you know, we got to be covering this team in week 15, 16, and 17, and the Panthers are right there in the hunt. And it can't be the shoe-in graphic where they're in the hunt, but the you know that at the bottom and just kind of throwing them in there because there's room. They need to seriously be in playoff contention, I believe, for Matt Rhule to keep his job. When David Tepper talked to media before the draft, he said he wants to see improvement. And that's vague, it's cliche, but taking it at face value means this team getting closer to that 500 record. And I think the team will benefit from playing in the NFC, which really, aside from a team or two, Tampa and maybe the Rams, don't have any clear-cut top dog. So I think that wild card picture will be Carolina's for the taking, or a team that can jump out and surprise the league and carry some momentum. And that's, I think, what it's going to take Matt Rhule to go in and see year four.
You find him on Twitter at Book of Ellis. Always good stuff from Ellis Williams. Ellis, enjoy your summer. Talk to you soon, pal.
I appreciate you, Doug.
That is Ellis Williams joining us here on the Technicom Hotline on Sports Radio 92.7 FNZ. Good stuff from him, and from what it sounds like, doesn't seem like that we are anywhere closer to answering that question than we were, say, at the start of OTAs or even as early as the NFL draft. Plenty more on Mike D'Antoni's alleged meeting with Michael Jordan to possibly solve the Hornets' head coaching woes. Again, I'm not happy with it. I understand folks take my comment as panic being some sort of insult, but I'm sorry. It just sounds like panic move, and I don't like the deal. And to be honest, I'd say the same thing if they were interviewing Terry Stotts today. I'd say the exact same thing if they were interviewing Terry Stotts. So don't make this into, oh, Will just doesn't like D'Antoni. I'd say the same thing if it was Terry Stotts. But it is what it is. Charming or Chotch comes your way next, including the NBA media's defense of Kenny Atkinson, which seems awful off. Sports Radio FNZ, 92.7 FM. Sports Radio 92.7 FNZ, Willie P here with you. Hope you're enjoying yourself today. We have the Nooners coming up at 12 noon. We'll give you the latest stories that are going on across the sports world and primarily in Charlotte. Also coming up at 12:20, we'll talk to James Herbert, CBSSports.com NBA writer. He's one of the NBA writers who is a big Hornets League Pass guy. We talked to him right around the play-in time earlier in the year before the play-in game against Atlanta. So we'll talk to him coming up at 12:20. We have the five questions coming up at 12:40 as well. D'Antoni, Stotts, or the field is the poll question right now at Willie P style. Majority of you, I'm probably sure, are reacting to the news of Adrian Wojnarowski saying that it looks like D'Antoni is meeting with MJ today. 47% of you, not a majority, but a plurality, say that you believe that D'Antoni will be the next head coach of the Charlotte Hornets. 32% are taking the field, or I'm sorry, 21% of you are saying Terry Stotts, and 32% of you are saying the field. A lot of votes for Quinn Snyder. Somebody goes Frank Vogel with an offensive assistant. That's one I haven't heard yet. One guy votes Michael Jordan. One guy said Shaka Smart. Somebody also, I really loved the comment that was made that said, I'd rather have Bob McKillop as the head coach of the Charlotte Hornets than Mike D'Antoni. Quite honestly, so would I. I'm was always in the anybody other than D'Antoni deal. And again, you're not going to change my mind on it. So like, I feel like it's a situation where, you know, if he's the coach, great. It's not that I'm not going to root for the team, and it's not that I'm going to root for them to fail, but you know, don't come calling me in 2 or 3 years when I'm still here telling you, hey, guess what? I told you so. But then again, who knows if he lasts as long as James Borrego did anyway, because they fired Borrego for a 43-win season, and who knows what they'll get if they don't get Miles Bridges back, be that as it may. It is time for Charming or Chotch. First one up, Mike D'Antoni, Charming or Chotch.
He's charming.
No.
He's an old man when he's an offensive wizard. He's got a great mustache.
Do you honestly think Mike D'Antoni lasts longer than 2 or 3 seasons here under any circumstances?
No, he's a bridge coach. He's the guy to elevate the talent on your roster to get him to the next step.
If you want a bridge coach, you hire Terry Stotts.
Or him. They're both, in my opinion, bridge coaches to the next guy to get this team to an Eastern Conference Finals.
Well, here's the problem. If they are bridge coaches, then what was James Borrego?
He was always a guy that was... This was always going to play out to where he was going to get them to a certain point. They were going to move on. I just think we all thought he was going to get them to like the second round before they moved on from JB.
I don't see why you don't see his tenure out. I feel like he got abruptly taken advantage of.
Oh, he did. Yeah.
This is from Matt Barnes, by the way, yesterday on NBA Today, offering this up in defense of Kenny Atkinson.
I agree with you, Perk. I mean, we don't really know the numbers, but I'm guessing it had to be somewhere near $20 million at least on the low end, 4 years, $5 million at least on the low end to stay in Golden State when you have a chance to go to Charlotte with a crop of young up-and-coming, particularly in LaMelo, superstars. Maybe Kenny knows something we don't know. You know, maybe Steve has another 2 or 3 years in him, and Kenny would be the perfect man to slide in and replace him. You know, Mike Brown paid his time and maybe possibly thought the same thing, but I think after, you know, this team was able to turn it around and understand their window is maybe another 2 or 3 years, maybe that'll be the end of Steve Kerr's run, and maybe Kenny wants to slide into this situation for every reason you said, Perk, because I've played there. It starts at the top with owner and management, and there's not another organization in the entire league that runs their team and in their organization like the Golden State Warriors do.
First of all, the thought that that Kenny Atkinson is making more money as an assistant than he would make as a head coach in Charlotte, that idea is totally chotch.
It's definitely chotch, but it's charming for assistant coaches to be making that type of money.
I don't think he's making that kind of money.
We've seen it in college football where assistants get paid top flight money, and that's why they don't want to become head coaches.
Venable's got, you know, buku bucks from Clemson before he got the Oklahoma job. I get that.
Yep.
But he wasn't making more than what I would consider Power 5 head coaches at stable jobs are making.
I think radio needs to adopt the same philosophy. Pay us board ops / producers elite money like hosts.
Don't get me started. The NBA media's defense of Kenny Atkinson is absolutely chotch because this man is not defensible. I understand you don't want to move your family 3 times in 3 years, Kenny. Here's the problem. Here's the thing. Don't take the interview.
Also, you've
don't
got the
go
money.
Through the process.
You've got the money. It's not even really a headache or a hassle. You just go find another mansion to live in and a new private school to send your kids to. Come on.
It doesn't make a lot of sense to me why they went through the entire process. It's so dumb. DJ Cahoots with a food one. With July 4th holiday coming up, mayonnaise on hot dogs.
Chotch.
Charming or chotch? I say chotch.
Yeah, mayonnaise as a whole condiment. Chotch.
Chotch.
It's
very
the worst
chotch.
Condiment that exists.
Mayonnaise as a solo act is chotch.
Yeah.
Mayonnaise can be great as an addition to something. Mayonnaise can be great as a contribution to an aioli or to a spicier mayo, but just plain, straight-up mayo, chotch.
Yeah, no, I don't eat mayonnaise on... I eat mayonnaise, like, in things, like it's in...
Yeah, it's like in tuna salad or something like that.
I don't eat that.
You don't do tuna salad?
No, heck no, or potatoes. I just eat salad, man.
The heck is wrong with you?
But yeah, no.
You don't like a nice German potato salad?
No, nope.
Come on.
I just eat straight salad.
No egg salad for you?
Oh, heck no.
No pimento cheese?
No.
What is wrong with you?
Have you smelled this studio on the diet I'm eating now?
I mean, yes.
Yeah, so imagine me with all that other crap. There would be literal crap in here.
Pimento cheese there's nothing wrong with pimento cheese at all. Sorry. Ketchup on hot dogs also, by the way, is totally chopped.
Yeah, I'm a mustard guy.
Very much
mustard,
so.
Chili, cheese, and onion.
Bone and I get into this argument at least once a year because he's team ketchup, and I just find him to be somewhat of a child.
I don't eat ketchup.
I eat it on fries. That's about it. Fries and burgers is really all I put it on.
I ate it so much as a kid that my taste buds literally grew numb to it, or to the point I don't like it.
Stanford Peace says potatoes should never be served cold. No potato salad. They're not cold. They're cooked. It is what it is. Mike from Forest City believes that Michael Jordan is better at identifying a good coach, better than people on the text line, and Willie P, so people should chill. Show me the evidence to that. Show me the evidence there, Mike from Forest City. I love you, but show me the evidence there.
I've got one for you.
Yes.
And it comes after your work attire, again, because this always gets brought up. Grown men wearing flip-flops to work. Charming or chotch?
It's charming.
I think it's chotch.
Stop it.
You're like a 12-year-old.
What's wrong with flip-flops?
Wear some shoes.
What's wrong with flip-flops? It's summer. It's summer. It's fine.
No.
This job has a bit more of a lax dress code than most jobs do. If I was walking into an office building, I'd have, you know, pants on and closed-toed shoes. But we work in the toy department, sir. If Kyle Bailey can wear Birks, I can wear flip-flops.
That's different. It's still an enclosed shoe.
But it's very much the same. Very much the same. Stop it. You're showing your behind here. Armando Bacot staying at UNC for a cool $500,000. That is very charming.
Charming as hell, baby.
That's according to NIL estimates for him at UNC. And this is what this is NIL doing its intended process here. NIL is doing what it's supposed to do here with that particular situation, is keeping great guys who are good for the game of college athletics in that game longer.
I ultimately think college basketball will benefit the most from NIL because it's going to be easier for these guys who are not going to go to the NBA and they're not going to make as much money overseas to come back to school. And like had this existed 2 years ago, Armando Bacot would be leaving Carolina as a millionaire. So I this is very charming, and it's going to be really charming for the sport of college basketball to keep its talent in the sport as opposed to leaving early for a paycheck.
Charming or chotch, the bravado of Chris Mack McClain for the Atlanta Braves. Charming or chotch? Chotch is the answer.
I don't like taking shots at...
Yes, you do.
At my
yes,
guy, Mac.
Do. Yes, you
because
do.
Because he always greets
yes,
me
do.
With a hey, yes. Fitty, when I come into the
yes,
studio.
Yes, you do. Don't lie. Tell the truth.
But it is getting annoying that this is a team that, yes, they've won 17 of 20 or whatever it is, and they're still 5.5 behind the Mets. But all they want to talk about is how great the Braves are playing right now and acknowledging that the Mets have the best record in the NL.
Mm-hmm.
With Jacob DeGrom, who hasn't started a game all season long.
And Scherzer.
And Scherzer, who's been out a freaking month. So, yes, it's shocking.
They're winning games pitched by David Peterson.
Exactly.
Okay? Get off of that. That's dumb. And also, the Panthers sticking with status quo at pass rusher opposite Brian Burns. I'm sorry. I love Frankie Louvu, but the Louvu, Haynes, Gross Matos triumvirate, that ain't it, Sam. I'm sorry. I look at it and I say, you need another person over there. And whether Carlos Dunlap is that guy, I'm not sure. But the fact that they didn't make a signing to at least replace the production of Hassan Reddick, I think is chotch.
Yeah.
Also, drafting at 13 and 15, we didn't get to. We're going to get to it a little bit later, but I am of the opinion that those picks should not be made at those spots. Either you trade them to get a pick that's greater or a pick that turns into a veteran.
Right now, it's charming. Because if you're not going to pay Miles Bridges, you got to find someone to replace that talent and that production.
I really hope that they're not contemplating not paying Miles Bridges.
I mean, I really hope not either. But would you doubt it at this point? I wouldn't.
This is different. Deshaun Watson, this is a breaking story from Ari Marov. Deshaun Watson has reached confidential settlements with all but four civil lawsuits that were filed against him, according to Tony Busby.
Mm.
That's interesting. and could maybe at least lend some ears into a possible wrap-up of the investigation with the National Football League and whether or not he plays a down of football in 2022. This is the Nick Wilson Show on Sports Radio 92.7 FNZ. That was Charmier Chach. The Nooners come your way next. All the stories across the sports world and in Charlotte on Sports Radio 92.7 FNZ.